Welcome to a very special Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. A while ago, Chris and I were invited on to the Pure Football Podcast and set a unique brief on how we would market Club X. Gavin at Pure Football was very kind to allow us to lift the audio and republish on our podcast. For those unfamiliar with Pure Football, it's a Scottish football podcast and website that looks at all aspects of Scottish football and beyond, giving in-depth insight and analysis. Chris is also co-host of the Pure Football Pure Championship podcast too, and he wouldn't be happy if I didn't give it a plug. You can also find the support materials we created for Club X on the Pure Football website. I'd also recommend keeping an eye out for future Club X specials over on the Pure Football podcast, as they look beyond just marketing and look at other areas such as recruitment. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to this latest edition of the Pure Football podcast, and this is a very special bonus episode, and I've roped in, well, one guy that you'll know and one actual guest who is extra special. Chris, I don't want to do you a disservice, but Chris, you can introduce yourself first, who you are and what you do.
Yeah, I think, well, I'm not extra special, I don't think, under your terms, Gav, but yeah, Chris Sampson, Sports Marketing Scotland, Pure Championship podcast, everything else on the Twitters.
More handles than anyone else. And I guess moving over to our actual guest, and this might give away a little bit around about what tonight's podcast is going to be. I've got Michael Boshill with me. Mike, how are you doing?
Not too bad. Boshill's a posh way of introducing me. I'll take that.
How would you pronounce it? How is it pronounced?
I would pronounce my surname Bockle, but I get absolutely everything, so that'll come as no surprise. Like, I get Boshill, Boshill, so I wouldn't worry about it. It's all good.
So, Michael, I guess the important thing is, who are you and why should people take interest to what you have to say tonight?
I'm the digital manager at the Scottish FA. I co-host the Scottish Football Marketing podcast with Chris. And I don't know if anybody actually wants to listen to what I've got to say, but obviously we're on here to talk about, well, you've given us a scenario, a club, and I'm sure you'll go into a bit more detail about it. And I suppose it's flipping the roles a little bit. Chris and I usually talk about on our podcast, get a guest on, talk about a topic, and really just do asking the questions. And now it's a case of put our money where our mouth is and look at how we would potentially do things.
Absolutely. And I think, so to give the listeners a bit of insight into what this is, so if you've not listened to the Sports Marketing podcast, first of all, I implore you, whether you're a work at a club or you're a fan, to give the guys a listen. Loads of really interesting guests, loads of different insights into things that clubs can do. And I guess this is where my blue sky thinking comes into it. So for anyone that's ever spoken with me, interacted with me, will know that I don't like to accept the status quo in Scottish football and in life, I guess. Very much like to believe that things can be done better. And if they can be done better, then why aren't they done better? And I think that's something that is, you can probably look at Scottish football in a number of ways. And what I've positioned to the guys is a scenario. So Club X. Club X is any club. It's a club that has aspirations. It's a club that is yours. It's a club that can, you know, be whatever it wants to be. So Club X, and the scenario is very much a real life scenario. So it's about improving a number of things at the club. And it's about looking at revenue generation. It's looking at fan base interaction. It's looking at your, you know, connecting with your community, all the things that some clubs do. But as Michael alluded to, Michael and Chris cover this on a regular basis with their guests. So it's quite nice to have this sort of flipped on its head. And before we get into the sort of specifics, I guess what I want to everyone to picture when they're listening to this podcast. So Club X, again, can be any club, it can be your club. But the scenario that I gave to Michael and Chris was that Club X is based in a town or a city with a population of approximately 30,000 people. 66% of the demographic are between 16 and 60. I guess the age range is quite important when it comes to football. The average attendance has been decreasing over the past few years due to poor performances on the park. So we've got some basic outlines in terms of our scenario. And The last season's average attendance was approximately 4,000. So this is something that, you, I guess, when you look throughout the leagues in Scotland, could be applied to a number of different clubs, that sort of figure. 65% of the tickets sold are from season ticket holders, so 65% of that 4,000. As a result of the poor performance, sponsorship income has decreased and there are a number of opportunities available. Revenue is limited, but the club is not in debt. So that's our sort of outline in terms of what Club X is and what our situation is. So I guess before we go into what we're going to do for Club X and what the brief actually was, Michael and Chris, would you mind giving me just a quick sort of overview of what are some of your frustrations right now with Scottish football clubs, and what do you think clubs can maybe do better that we'll maybe get into when we get into the Club X brief? Chris, I'll come to you first.
Yeah, I think it's actually a really tricky question because we obviously, if anybody has listened to the podcast with Michael and I and all the guests we get on, we try and be so positive. But a lot of the time it's easy to be negative as well about a lot of the things that don't happen in Scottish football. I think obviously at the moment there is so many shining lights. Like, it's really difficult for us to do any podcast and not talk about Motherwell, but you've got good things happening at Hibs. Rangers and Celtic are obviously on another level, but then there's clubs kind of in the kind of lower tiers and maybe even the lower tier of the Premiership as well that you just look at and you think that they could be so much better at every aspect. Gavin, and we're not going to talk about this tonight, but in terms of even something really close to you now in terms of recruitment, like, I think that'll be the biggest bugbear for you. And for me as well, personally, it's actually a bugbear too, because one of the things I often say is that instead of signing that extra player, why don't you put that money into some kind of marketing? Why don't you put it into another wage in the kind of back office or front office, as it's called a lot of the time over in like America? So that's one of the biggest things for me, is it's in terms of having that overall like strategy almost in this space. I think that is probably what's lacking a lot of the time from what I see anyway.
Yeah, look, from my point of view, I echo a bit of what Chris says there. I think I've got a lot of sympathy for clubs out there. I know, as Chris says, as you go further down the pyramid, priorities are different, resources different. And this is very much a generalisation, but if you look at the makeup of boards and committees of clubs, especially part-time clubs, you're looking at 40-plus years old men. I don't want to say they're out of date, because that's not the case at all. There's some great people working within Scottish football, and I'm very cautious about making sweeping generalisations. However, I think there is the need for different thinking, and I think that's what it is. I think it's fans need to come a lot more higher up the priority list for a lot of clubs. I think how they can sort of portray their brand, if you like, and like it or not, people sometimes are a bit sceptical around the word brand, especially when it comes to a football club. But how you go about what you do is very important, and what you stand for, and we'll get into that. But I think there's a lot of clubs, again, there's probably people listening to this going, that's not the case at my club, and there is great examples of clubs. Chris has mentioned a couple of them, but there is some clubs in Scottish football that I cannot tell you what their identity is, what they stand for, and whether it's just getting a game of football at 3 o'clock on the Saturday seems to be the only thing.
I guess just to move into then, you know, the sort of the brief that I positioned to both you and Chris. So we already know the facts around about Club X. And remember, this is any club, this is your club. So I really want you to picture this and think about what you would want from your club when we go through the scenario. So the brief that was positioned to Michael and Chris by the general manager, Gavin Miller, was that you've been asked to focus in on revenue generation. You've got free rein on how you fulfil this ambition. However, the board have asked you to consider costs. The club wants you to focus on community and attract new fans, but also ensure that existing support is not forgotten. One area that the board feels needs a focus is player sponsorship, as this is quite effective and would like you to design a strategy on this. The club would also like to focus in on sales in the club shop. And there's also been a drop-off in food and drinks sold at the games, and this needs to be addressed. So there's a number of different aspects there and a number of different sort of tasks that's been put to both you guys to try and help turn things around at Club X. So guys, let's start off then. So what was your, imagine you were positioned this brief, what were the sort of initial steps that you would take? Michael, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, look, I tried not to overcomplicate this, as it does need to resonate with similar clubs, and I've kind of tried to look at mixing strategy with some tactics later on, because I wouldn't expect anybody to be trying to do this all on their own either. I got to look at using those that are willing to help. And as I said at the start, I'm sure there's people listening to this saying that'll never work, or that's how not how I would do it. And that's perfectly fine. My approach is, let's try and do something different to what's expected or what's the norm in Scotland. I don't want to come across as too cheesy or Americanized. That's not the case. But it's a little bit about breaking the script where we can, especially within Scottish football. So before I started, I looked at, well, obviously, I already gave the spoiler away. So we need to start with anything that we want to do, any activity or tactics that we're even going to look at, is we need to determine what the club stands for. We need to know what our values are, what our identity is. Obviously, in this case, it's not about winning. So if it was real life, obviously, you could delve a bit into the club history a little bit more. I've made a lot of assumptions as I've gone here and just gone with what I think would be the case. But without a club identity, without values, we really don't have an overarching strategy. We don't really have anything as a building block on why we would well do what we do, if you like. Your identity and values should really filter through not just your marketing, but your staff, volunteer behaviours, anything really that the club culture, if you like. And if we want to shift that club culture, it's going to take time. We're talking about all this. I don't expect that somebody rolls into a club, they do a nice fancy, this is what we're going to do, they do the research which we'll go into and stuff like that, and then by the following week, by the following month, that everything's rosy, because it's not. None of this will be instant, but and some of it you won't be able to measure either. Chris and I did a podcast with Daniel Lambert from the Bohemian Football Club in Ireland recently, and you have to believe you're doing the right thing, and the results will come. And as I said, the best example of that is Bohemian. So yeah, look, I'd be starting with what's our identity, and the three questions I'd ask is, what does the club stand for, what is the club identity as a whole, and what are the club values?
I think quite a lot of our stuff is maybe going to be quite skewed towards that Bohemian podcast, isn't it, Michael? Because like, I think it had such an effect on both of us from that perspective, because it was a bit different and it was something a little bit new from us as from the perspective of Scottish football. And I think I'm pretty much similar to you, apart from I thought about what my aims would be first of all, but obviously a big part of that, like when I thought about the aims, then a big part of it was then thinking back up again in terms of what does the club actually stand for, exactly the same as you. Like that's my first kind of slide note that I've got. And I've got, I dived in a little bit similarly to you as well, where obviously you don't know exactly what this town is, but I did a bit of a kind of rallying cry, and I'm just going to read it out because it's a bit wanky, but I'm going to read it anyway. It's our club. Club X isn't just a football club. It's a sports club. It's a destination in the town. It's a community hub. It's a place to go and eat, to drink, to socialise, to play, to work, to worship. It's our club. And I thought, like, it's our club is basically what that club stands for. It, like, Gav, one of the aims and one of the things that you mentioned, obviously, was that community focus. And that's what I had in mind from that bit. I think one of the things you maybe missed off as well is that the Club X is in a one club town as well. So there's no kind of competing other clubs. Obviously, we see that quite a lot in some of our towns and cities in Scotland as well. And I think that was a lot that was playing on my mind for this kind of first aspect of it.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Chris, that obviously with that sort of mission statement, value statement of what you want to call it, I've got something similar, but just before, the process I would go through before I got to that, and obviously we're working off a sort of made up scenario. So there's different ways of approaching this, but I'd go and look at to test what our thinking is and gain a greater insight into we need to ask the right questions to the right people. And I think there's I've got a quote, because obviously Gav had asked us to put together some slides on this, and I've got a quote in here where it says, "A point of view can be dangerous luxury when substituted for insight and understanding." And there's an extreme example of this week, and it's Donald Trump. So I think from those that have seen that video where he's flinging about his bar graphs, he's using data to sort of stress his point of view, which is obviously, he's got his point of view and he's trying to use data to justify that, whereas the point of view should come from the data. And from there, then what I'd be looking at is going, a lot of clubs will do a fan survey, which I think is 100% right. I think you have to do that. But I actually think clubs need to do 3 other additional surveys. So I would, ask your current fan base. I'd be finding out about what the club means to them, why they come to games, the club's role in the community and what they think that role is, what they think the club's values are, what their experiences at matches, test potentially some season ticket models, ask them if they've experienced hospitality, their communication preferences, some of the stuff that you expect to see in club surveys that happen up and down the country. My second survey would then go, now people are going 4 surveys, Michael, you must be kidding, that is a hell of a lot of work. And I'm not going to lie, some of this is, you're going to have to do a bit of work, but I think that it's using those that are willing to help within your fan base and volunteers at the club and other people, but to really understand and try and shift the needle, if you like, but you need to be doing the work. So town residents, so those that live in your town, so you've got 4,000 people coming to your games, let's just assume average, I don't know, let's just say 500 of them are away fans, so you've got 3,500 there that are going to the game, so you've got another 26,500 that don't. So I'd be asking the town residents, who do you support? Why do you support them? How often do you go to watch that team? How often, and have you ever been to see Club X? Why don't they come to see Club X? What would tempt them? The club's role in the community, what they think it is, and whether they'd be ever interested in hospitality and what they do with their days out with their pals and stuff like that. My third survey, we go to local businesses. We talk about trying to engage community and trying to be... just being having a stronger role within that community. So I'd be asking local businesses, have they ever done anything with the club before, what their thoughts are on the club and what it stands for. Again, trying to get understand other people's perceptions and values of the club. I'd be asking how the club could support the town more. Let's not try and guess what we could do. Let's find out what local businesses actually expect or want from the club, and do. Again, just finding out behaviours. Do they entertain clients, reward staff, etc.? Thinking down the line, how can we play a role in that? And finally, once you get through your 3 surveys, you're on to your 4th survey in my world. So it'd be the club director, staff and volunteers. And I'd actually ask them, because I think it's easy to ask fans, but sometimes we don't ask internally. And what does the club mean to them? What do they think the club's role in the community is? What do they believe the club's values are? What do they think the club does well? What do they think the club does not do well? And what would you like to see more of from the club? And I think once you get that understanding, you'll start to, and then this is talking about wonky stuff, Chris. This is going to be a marketing buzzword bingo, but what your ecosystem's like. And you'll get the bigger picture in terms of where your club fits, not just within your fan base, but within your town, and also how people view the club beyond your own fan base. So, and I think for the purpose of this, I mean, there's some basic top level assumptions that when I was putting this together, I made. I mean, kind of fan base, you would assume that they're going to say the club's a large part of their life. The reason they support go is sense of belonging. They reckon it's too expensive to go regularly to hospitality. They think the match experience is okay. Happy with a season ticket but open a subscription model. I won't go through everything that I've put in here, but town residents, I'm going to guess, and this is just a wild assumption, but most of the people that are non-Club X fans will support Celtic Rangers. Just throwing that out there. So they'll maybe even only go occasionally to Glasgow, even less to Club X. They don't think Club X is very good. And they're not sure what would attract them to come, apart from maybe cheaper free tickets. And they don't really have an opinion on the club's role in the community. And you can go on local businesses and club directors. You can there's some obvious assumptions you can be there, but you won't ever know if your assumptions and theories are right unless you do the actual asking.
I think that's a really sort of good starting point there, Michael. I think that you're right in terms of we need to get a full 360 view understanding of our not just what our people at the our fans that come to the game. We need to understand the full town if we really want to achieve something. And I guess a quick question I had for you on that, is there anything that you think would stop any team in Scotland from being able to understand this level of information other than, I guess, the time it takes itself?
I think that the time, I think the daunting nature of what I've probably just suggested there, because there is a bit of work that needs that. It's like, how do you get that survey in front of people? It sounds silly, but I mean, we've all seen surveys that are very leading in nature that want you to probably say something, and you need to find that balance. If I was a club, I would be approaching Scottish FA for help. I'd be looking for help within my fan base. There's got bound to be supporters that have gone to university or that have expertise in their line of work and that could potentially lend a hand in this space. So I think it's the, when you're looking at this going, oh my God, right, he's proposed four surveys. I don't even know where to begin with one survey, let alone four. How do we analyse the results? How do we actually then, because it's all very well having the data and the results, but it's actually pulling the insights out of it, which is a skill in itself. So it's, as I said at the very start, I'm not expecting one person to do any of this on their own. You've got to seek the right help to help you with this. But I'm sure, and again, and this is where people say, well, you're a bit far removed from it because you work at Scottish FA, which is different to what happens at a team in League One or whatever. But I would put money on that there's people willing to help. And if not, I'm pretty sure at the Scottish FA we would help. So,
sometimes I feel like, and maybe it's because we don't maybe pay attention to every single club across the pyramid, but I feel like sometimes there's a bit of a sense of pride that comes in as well. Sometimes when clubs maybe don't feel like they can reach out to just whoever for help because they feel like they need to do it all themselves. Sometimes that's definitely the impression that I get. And I think, like you said, it's absolutely massive. Like your fan base or your immediate fan base, there's going to be people in there that want to help because they love the club so much. And we've seen that. Like, again, we'll probably throw in a couple of pod references that we've had over the last couple of weeks or so, but we had Nylon from Raith Rovers, and they're a club that like has 80 volunteers that basically help with the day-to-day running of that football club. And now they've got to the Championship. And within 48 hours, they've had 500 season ticket renewals for the Championship season. And that is just run on volunteers, people like giving up their time to help their football club that they love. And I think, yes, we've had a bit of backlash on this before, but in terms of volunteering at football clubs, but it does need to be backed up with paid positions too. I definitely feel like that, but there is people out there that want to help your club. And if you don't go out and find them, then you're just going to be doing the same old.
I was just going to jump out there. It's like I think you're right, Chris. I think pride probably is a part of that. I think people will just say, well, I know what it's like, and have their own opinions. And the data might back that up. It might not. What I would also say is if you've conducted four surveys, you are sitting on a wealth of data, and we'll get on to additional revenue generation, but sponsors are looking more and more that they just don't want a logo on a shirt or a logo on a stadium. And if you can tell them demographics, or you've got all this data that you can talk to potential businesses around your club, then that's a never great asset. That gives you another reason why and justification why you should do it.
I think that's, you know, that I think the overarching theme around about Club X here is we want to move the needle. It's what you said earlier, Michael. And these are the things that you're probably going to have to do, like Chris mentioned, with the pride. You're going to have to swallow that pride if you are wanting to take that step forward. And I think you're going to need to rely on the people that are willing to, you know, almost die for your club. And I guess, you know, Club X would be no different. We would have a requirement for people to support throughout all of this. So I guess, guys, so let's sort of move on a bit then. So we've understood some of the basic steps that we were going to make. We're going to understand what our culture is. We're going to understand what we stand for. We're going to look to understand what our fan base is views are. We're going to understand what the people that are not our fans, what their views are, and connect with local businesses. So now that we've established some of our basic starting steps, what would be your next sort of move, Chris?
Well, I think I mentioned at the start, but first of all, I thought about what the overall aims would be for this entire kind of project. And I set out four just based on some of the stuff that you sent us, Gav, in terms of the brief. And obviously, starting, as we've said, with, well, Michael wants to start with a survey. Survey is definitely part of mine. I hadn't planned it at the start, but it's definitely a part of the overall project. But starting with what does the club stand for, and then what stems off of that. So we've got increased attendance. And that's a given. Every club in the land probably wants to do that. Increasing the sponsorship, absolute vital. You flagged that, Gav, as one of the things. Increasing fan engagement. And then I've also got increased club engagement as well. And I think I probably want to talk about that one a little bit, because I called it club engagement, but it probably could be called a few other things in terms of like just that was where I was thinking more about that club value. That's kind of the starting base, but then it's developing an identity for the club as well. Again, so many good examples across world football and a few in the UK and Scotland as well, with clubs that have developed that kind of visual identity and the tone of voice as well. Like obviously calling out the likes of BSC Glasgow as well, because they're so unique in the way that they speak to fans. But then we've seen Rangers today, I called it out, that just trying to engage with the fans on their own level and speaking to them like they are one of their pals that is sitting next to them supporting the same club as them. And the big thing for me as part of club engagement was creating a club that fans, partners and employees want to be associated with and part of. And I think that's the biggest thing for me in terms of if you create a club that has values and people resonate with those values, those people want to come towards you. You don't have to be the ones always pushing out and advertising out for things like help, for things like new sponsorships, for things like increasing kind of attendance and things like that. You make the club attractive and you make it look attractive, then those things will come to you. And I think for me, the overarching it's our club thing was everything that filtered through on this. Like the club cares about you. You develop stronger feelings for it because you think you are valued by that club. And like being fan first on every single thing. I think that was the big thing for me in terms of club engagement. It was developing that kind of two-way situation between club and fan and then everything else that stems on top of that.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I mentioned off air that this could turn into TED Talks, and I started to get flashbacks there when you were speaking around about a guy called Simon Sinek, and he spoke about it's not what you do, but it's why you do it. And I feel like that is that the sort of thing that you're getting at there, Chris, with your club engagement, is why you're doing these things.
Yeah, totally. Because why you want your employees at your club or business as a whole. Like, I'm talking about like this is things that businesses do. Like you look at the likes of Google and you think about at the heart of it, why do they have a canteen on the campus? Why do they have estate agents on the campus? Why do they have insurance on the campus? Why can you do X, Y, and Z on the campus? And it's because they want to make you feel at home there. They want to make you feel like basically you can't leave. And they want to make you feel comfortable in a workplace because all of those things make you feel happier at work, make you feel like you just want to be there. And I think if a football club doesn't need to do all those things to make people do that, people are drawn towards them anyway. But if you want more people to be drawn towards your club than already are, then you need to start doing some of those things.
Michael, is there anything you want to come in with there?
Yeah, again, I'm very similar to Chris, and he talks about aims and objectives, and for the purpose of this and the purpose of the sort of deck I put together, I got to the bit of defining what we do, and off the back of all the assumptions. And of course, before you do the surveys in the my sort of Club X world, if you like, you'll already kind of have a feel for what you want to do. The surveys will either back that up or it will help shape what your thinking is. And basically what I got to is, how do we define what we want to do? And then what is the what, how, and why? So for me, defining what we do, I've gone for a slightly shortened statement, but it goes along the lines of a club that believes in itself, the fans, and the town. And then the what is establish the club at the heart of the community. The how is we think differently and do what the town doesn't expect us to do. And then the why is because football in the club can make a difference to many. And look, there's probably people listening to that going, oh, yeah, that's similar to us. And there'll be clubs going, no, that's nowhere near what we are. And every club's different. But for me, that understanding the what, how, and why then leads us into the three areas of focus for what I've got on my one, which would be the local community, the fan experience, and additional revenue generation. So, and as I said, look, word of warning, and I've put this in the deck as well, is that none of this is easy, and you need to manage expectations. That's the key one for me.
I think that's a really good point in terms of none of this podcast or none of this sort of mini series will turn out to be, you know, easy work. But I think this is where, if you want to be, you know, take that next step, you have to be willing to put in the sort of the hard yards. It's not just going to all fall in your lap. You know, I think we've obviously referenced Motherwell a few times, but it's not so far removed that they were almost going out of business, you know. So loads of things can change in football, and I think it's only when you get the right people wanting to do the right things that you'll see that shift. So yeah, I think that's some really good things that both of you covered so far. So I guess going back to the brief then, so we know that our overarching aim is revenue generation. We know that we've got free rein in how to do that. We know that we've got an understanding of some of our basic principles and what our objectives are. Where would we go from this stage, guys?
I would start going back to going, right, well, what have I defined that I want to do? And we've always got to, the key thing for whenever looking at any activity that you want to do or any planning is just keep reminding yourself of what you want to do. So I said, look, our vision is to be a club that believes in itself, the fans and the town, and the what is to establish the club at the heart of the community. So you've got to start with a community focus for me and talk. I've used the word belief. It's not uncommon in football, for especially in marketing gimmicks or campaigns. But for Club X, I want, through the work that we do, we want local people in the community to believe in what we're doing too. So we don't want to just be the ones that believe in our local town. We want people to believe in what we're doing. And then this is where I suppose you start communicating values a little bit, or at least making starting a wee bit of an education on what the values are. So for the purpose of Club X, I've put to support the local community as much as possible. We promise to support local businesses. We promise to support the less fortunate and local charities. We promise to support local creatives, and we promise to do the right thing. And then from there, you start looking at what is your activity around town. And for me, you go, there's probably four, based on what the path we've been taking here with this. So talking about the belief and being the heart of community is, you look at the local schools and colleges, which is a town of 30,000. I'm assuming there's a few. I would focus on primary schools, and I'm not just talking about giving away free season tickets or free tickets. I think that's an easy thing to do, but you probably get a one-off hit. You're not going to get that long term. So do you look at, and this, we're starting to get into tactics, which is different from the sort of strategy and theory, but the sort of covering the brief is trying to cover as much of this as possible and be as practical as possible. Is, can you get player school visits? Can you get players to school training visits? Can you get coaches taking school training? One of the things I took from, and Chris is right, we'll reference our podcast a lot on this, Mark Bradley talked about it in one of the first episodes we did of the podcast, and it's an idea that stuck with me the whole time is, can we get a school penalty competition at half-time throughout the season with all the local primary schools? So you just arrange a fixture list, they come at half-time. I would anticipate then you would hopefully get some people coming along to support the schools at half-time and then experience the club. So doing things like that. Can you use the stadium for classes and education? Danny Bisland, who's club development. Sorry, Danny, I've got your job title there wrong and I can't even remember it off the top of my head and I work with you. I'm just going to call you club services manager, which is not actually your job title, but if you're listening. But he...
Danny's going to be raging at you now.
Yeah, he will be. He'll be... Him and Paul came on and they were talking about Montrose use Lynx Park and open it up to the school to do like maths classes and stuff like that in there. So using the stadium for classes and education, partner with local university and college, talk about skills gaps at clubs. If there's a local college, if there's a design course, if there's a business course, if there's a whatever it is, use that, partner up. There's got to be mutually beneficial arrangements that can be made there. You're looking at, we talked about local businesses when it came to surveys. It's like, how do you use local businesses and how can you help local businesses? And you're looking at things like using local suppliers for your food and drink. You're looking at building those relationships. You're looking at collaborations with things like local distillers, butchers, bakers, creatives. You're looking for business opportunities as opposed to which I was saying before, the old-fashioned, just put a logo on it and everything will be okay, and promote the stadium as a facility to use and be in the heart of community. And some clubs are a bit difficult, that your club's not, maybe the ground's not central enough, but there's still opportunities to use the ground in different ways. How do you partner with local grassroots clubs? How do you build partnerships with them? How do you get your players visiting those local teams, coaches taking training sessions there? And then obviously local charities and people using the power of football to support local initiatives and charities and celebrating the local heroes on social and at games. And by doing some of that community activity, you're just doing the right thing. You're helping people, then people have a better opinion of the club, better feeling around the club, and from there you kind of take that activity and then you look to increase your presence around town at the same time. Because how many clubs or towns have you been in and you would not know a football ground's there or a football club belongs to that ground? So I mean, you've got to do simple things like increasing the signage and promotion around the town center. Could you, for example, and again we're getting really into tactics now, but can you run a competition for local businesses at the start of the season with shop displays, and the best shop display gets free advertising at the ground or something? You know, you try and do something that engages the community in a different way. Can you have appearances at local events or activity on non-match weekends in and around the town? It's reminding people that this club is part of this community and it is and should be at the heart of the community.
Chris, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, I think, I had a kind of feeling that Michael and I was going to be relatively similar because we've done so many podcasts together now and listened to so many of the same stories. But like for me, a lot of my things and probably a couple of my aims feed into each other. And Michael kind of covered that with a lot of his examples there too, in terms of it's increasing sponsorship and then increasing fan engagement. And I think for me, both of those things feed into my part in terms of what does the club stand for? And one of the things I said was it being a destination in the town. Michael's just covered that absolutely like brilliantly as well. But starting off with the sponsorship side of things, like you think about biggest clubs in the world and Man United get absolutely slaughtered for them signing up like official noodle partners and things like that. But You look at that and you pull it right back. What is it? It's them trying to sign up partners that they think are relevant to their fan base. And then from me, I took that and I went and kind of hyper local in terms of some of the sponsorships that kind of align back into the It's Our Club that I had. So club for the fans, club for the employees, and a club for the town. And looking at the sponsorships, Michael covered loads of them too, but what about local public transport? Like, can you get discounts and with them around the town and to the stadium on a match day? Local brewery, like offering it in the hospitality. Local bakery, like supplying the pie stands. Local leisure centres and gyms as well. So obviously, like promoting that health and fitness aspect. It's not just the likes of beers and pies that you're trying to get into your fans. It's keeping them fit as well, keeping them healthy. And then Michael covered local schools and colleges as well in terms of offering workplace programs or like apprenticeships around the club even as well. And I think like, for me, like, you need to be, and I've said, you need to be fan first, but I think partner needs to come second as well in that, and think about the club and the third aspect of that. So, like, the partnerships that you sign up should benefit the fans, but they should also then kind of be creating more value for those partners as well, to strengthen that relationship, be more attractive to more partners that want to sign up. And both of those things, those two points, ultimately benefit the club at the end of the day. And I think thinking about it in that way, where you are thinking about not the club first, but the club will benefit from things that you do, I think that it's kind of like shifting that mindset a little bit. And yeah, I think if you're thinking about it in that way, then for me, that follows on. And I think, like Michael said as well, like some of the fan engagement things in terms of getting schools onto the pitch at halftime. And one of the things that stuck with me is we had Ryan Morant on the podcast, used to be at Motherwell, was at Brentford as well for a bit. Like, a lot of the things that they did at Brentford was like surprising the fans. And that's always stuck with me as well, in terms of things like meeting the manager just before the match, like getting kids into the dressing room to speak to the players, like delivering a message to the players that they've just been able to draw in a kids area. Like, those things cost nothing, but they go a massive long way as well to kind of creating those experiences that just overall improve things. And those things maybe aren't things that you can partner up or sponsor, but they are the things that are going to improve that fan and how much they love the football club that they support.
I love it. But what I'm going to do here now is, so for all, we've obviously heard loads of blue sky thinking, and it's honestly doing wonders for me. But what I'd like us to do is just take a little pause here and think about the almost the ah but. So what would stop us, or stop any club from doing this, and what could be a potential way around that? So Michael, you spoke a lot about trying to connect with local businesses. So let's just imagine here that Club X in our town, we've tried this before and it's not necessarily worked. What sort of things could you do differently?
I think have open and honest conversations. It's not sales pitches. It's actually asking questions. You're not going in with a bottom line that you don't want to leave that meeting until you get at least an advertising hoarding sold. I think it's just building those relationships, and there might have to be a little bit of, look, come up, we'll try something, or just do little pilots here and there. I think the our bits will be time. We've said it throughout this podcast already. It's a lot of work, a lot of time needed to go into it. There's a lot of rejection that might come the way as well, because you're going to get scepticism from local businesses who have maybe been there, been on the receiving end of sales pitches off the club before, not really had great experiences. They might have a great relationship, and they might be, you might get more insight there. And but it's that time and effort, but I think it's have just trying to build a relationship, and it's maybe not one that will prove fruitful that month, maybe not even that season. But if you can keep local businesses on side for when the time's right, and you can start to show those wins, and I think that's what it is, because unless things start changing at the club, businesses, fans, local community will look at it and go, it's the same old, same old. So you kind of need to demonstrate some quick wins initially, as well as some of the longer term cultural changes as well.
It's the mindset shift, definitely. Like, comes back to what I was saying. Like, if you're fan first and then partner second, you don't even think about the club. You shouldn't even think about the club in a lot of aspects. You think about what you can do to improve those fan experiences, and what you can do to try and get partners on board. Michael's exactly right, in terms of it might not come tomorrow, or it might not come next week. It might not even come at all. Do you know what I mean? Like, it might just be you try your shot with that partner that maybe keeps rejecting you, but they are one day it might come, but yeah, you never know. And I think it comes back again to the values, in terms of if you've gone into the club and you've completely shifted everything about it and tried to make it align a bit more with how the fans are thinking, about how the employees at the club are thinking, about how the town thinks about that club, then you just have to hope sometimes. And it comes back to, again, what we were saying about Bohemian podcast, like, there wasn't results straight away. There maybe wasn't results in after that first season, but they are getting some results now, and they've had an incredible rise in their average attendance. And without winning a lot of football matches without winning trophies. These things do happen, and it is just about putting the effort in and persistence as well. I think that's one of the biggest things.
Honestly, like this is like all the things that I want to hear on a daily basis. So if we, I think I might end up just listening to this every single day because
another big example as well. Like we had with like the Berwick example. Like that was another great podcast that we did, and they've kind of done this almost. Like Michael, to a certain extent, I'm sure you would definitely agree with me in that. At the start of this year, it looks as though, from the outside looking in, that they've completely 360'd that club. Like, think about that season when they got relegated from League Two, and they were kind of almost a villain club. Like, yeah. People actually that didn't even know who they were, they kind of wanted them to go down a little bit. And I probably thought that as well. I'm not going to lie there. But then, if you think about what they've done over the last couple of months, and then even kind of this year as a whole, they've got a completely new kind of board of directors on board. Like, we spoke to Nathan on the podcast. He was an absolute brilliant listen, and he detailed a lot of the things that they were doing on the marketing side. But they are signing up sponsors here, there, and everywhere at the moment, and they're partnering with businesses that make sense, and local businesses as well. Like, there is examples of this happening on a regular basis at the moment in Scottish football.
I completely echo that, Chris, and I think Berwick Rangers, you're right. You have an opinion. I had an opinion of Berwick Rangers before I did that podcast, and between them and Bohemians, they're now on my football bucket list to go and see.
Yeah.
And I think if you've got to a point where your reputation in your town is maybe not that great, it's maybe not a case of when you're talking to clubs, it's about, talking to businesses, and it's about what businesses can give you. It's actually, what can you give back to businesses, and how can you help them? And by helping them, they'll hopefully help you.
Yeah, I think that's, I think that's really, I'm actually a little bit lost for words in terms of how excited I am about this. And this is a made up situation. but yeah, I guess, so let's bring it back then. So we've understood a lot of things here. We've understood how we're going to engage our community. And if we engage our community, then that should hopefully increase the attendances. That's what we're saying, right? So let's maybe, that's an output of the sort of input that we're putting in terms of how we do things. So I guess, what other strategies could there be in terms of going back to the overarching brief of revenue generation? Obviously, attendance is an easy one. Is there anything else that we could consider there that would increase the attendance? Or do you think that we should maybe move on to a different aspect? Chris, I'll come to you.
Yeah, I had a couple of things around increasing attendance. It was probably, so I think you mentioned that average attendance has been declining, 4,000 last season, and Michael made up a figure that, say, 500 of them are the away fans. Like, so the objectives from this I took were converting those non-season ticket holders to purchase a season ticket. You've got to continue offering the value for the retention of the current season ticket holders. And then you've got that third aspect of attracting new fans to casually attend as well. Actually, the biggest thing that I thought in terms of an action for this was breaking down those barriers to make it as easy as possible to purchase a ticket. And Gav, me and you, this is probably one of the biggest things that we've spoken about for a long time in terms of the kind of, not even mobile aspect, but kind of digitalization of Scottish football, where a lot of the times you cannot purchase a ticket for a match on a Saturday online. You basically have to rock up on a Saturday at quarter to three and buy your ticket at the ticket office, and you haven't been able to do that beforehand. You don't have it on your phone to scan it into the ground, and yes, those things do take investment, and that'll probably be the biggest thing that gets shot down in this aspect. But making it as easy as possible to purchase and renew just a casual ticket, or purchasing or renewing that season ticket as well, because again, there's a very difficult summer to compare things to, but this summer, obviously some clubs aren't even offering the likes of like payment plans for their season tickets. It's such a difficult time in Scottish football. It's such a difficult time in society, but the fact that clubs are still asking fans to shell out a lump sum at the moment for their season ticket when there's so much uncertainty is a little bit ridiculous in my head. But then to not even offer the likes of a payment plan on that on top of it is just a bit of a an open goal that I kind of keep saying for a lot of things. But yeah, the biggest thing for me, yeah, ease of purchase for increasing that attendance, because it goes a long way again.
I think that's, again, some really good points there. I think on the current situation, my feeling is that, you know, you're absolutely right in terms of it's a difficult situation for everyone, you know, in football, out of football, and life in general. But this is also a really good opportunity for a lot of clubs to try and reset a lot of things, right? This is an opportunity where you can, without it sounding bad, but you can maybe make the utmost of the uncertainty. Michael, you mentioned about, you know, connecting with local charities and things like that. So this is where, if you've got your community aspect right, then these uncertain times will maybe feel a little bit easier, and people might be a little bit more willing to either, you know, pay that lump sum because they have that connection. And you might find that it can be turned around if you have all these things in place. And again, I know we've said it a number of times, and time is definitely, I guess, the one of the most difficult things in all of this. But there's nothing so far that we've spoke about that isn't within the realms of reality to any Scottish football club. Is that fair to say?
I think it's relatively fair to say. I think there's probably some things, and we'll get on. I'm sure Chris talked about ticketing systems there, and Chris is right, there is investments in that, and unless you can prove that an ROI, it might not be worth that investment. But the general principles about everything we've said and how clubs adapt that to their own, what's happening at their own sort of level, it's very much, I think they could definitely look at that, yeah.
Okay, so let's keep the sort of brief rolling. Michael, is there anything in terms of your strategy and increased attendance that Chris hasn't covered, or anything that you'd like to add?
Yeah, look, I think I had a whole sort of pillar around fan experience, and fan experience has a lot of different connotations to different people, and some people just see it as what happens at the ground, and you get, whether it's Americanizing the game, as some see it as, but it's not really. And I think you need to understand the fan journey. And as a club, if you're looking to do anything, you've got to have a good understanding of the fan journeys. And it's not just one journey. You need to understand how you make your fans feel valued. You need to make it attractive to new fans and get them to come back no matter the results on the park. And Chris mentioned it there. He kind of done some different groups of fans, and I've probably split them up into four very top level segmentation from my side. But you've got your season ticket holders, you've got your regular match goers who are not season ticket holders, so they might not go to every game, but they'll go to a good number of games during the season. You've got your occasional match goer, might only go to one or two games a season, maybe a handful. And then you've got your never been, your first timers. And you've got to understand each of them is going to interact with your club in a different way. And that fan experience starts not at 2:45 when you're rocking up to that ground. It started a month before they've even decided to go to a game, a year before they've decided to go to a game. There's different things, like whether your website, for example, have you got all the info for all your fan segments that they might be looking for? Have you got your season ticket info? Have you got your updated fixtures and results? Your away game info for season ticket holders or just those that want to go to the games. How do you get to the ground, especially for the first time? What to expect when you get to the ground if it's your first game? Regular updates on match information, updates from the board even. You've got your other fan communications. One thing that me and Chris have spoke about several times, and I still only believe there's a handful of clubs now, I've got to admit and put my hands up, that I do not subscribe to every club's email in Scotland, but I don't know. I believe there's only a handful of clubs that are kind of doing this all right. But you need to build a centralised fan database that allows you to email them. You need more relevant people on your database. It's easy just to keep adding numbers, but you need to have the right people on there. I find it's the easiest way to communicate, especially what we do at the Scottish FA in with Scotland. And I'll put my hands up, we're probably not perfect at it at all. We've got a long way to go to where we want to be, but we've tried to make significant strides in the last couple of years. And by doing that, it means different emails for different groups. And you've got to realise it's not always about selling when you're emailing. It's actually just giving information a lot of the time. Hibs do a lot of emails around fan information as well, which, for example, and there'll be other clubs out there that do it. Social media. We talk about club identity. We talk about values. How many social media accounts do you see for clubs that are either one person's opinion, especially the lower you go down, or it's the social media persona doesn't maybe match the club's identity? Fans need to, if I was Club X, I'd want my fans to believe that we will answer their questions and support them as much as they support us. But they will also realise that on social media, we are portraying our club values and are continuing that identity. It's about brand, it's about behaviours. And then face-to-face, it's whether you're at the ground, events, fan forums, whatever it is, you've got, as a club, I generally believe we should be prominent and proactive. A lot of clubs will say they put their fans first, but actually how many do? And for us, as Club X, I'd say it's something that's important there. Sorry, I'm probably rambling at this point, but season ticket holders, the survey should help us understand any common issues among season ticket holders. For some, it could be as basic as showing some TLC to their section of the ground, about fix my seat or fix the seats or a lick of paint. For others, it could be more complex and all around not feeling valued. But you'd hope all the work that you're now doing will start to show that. One of the things that I would love to start doing it in Scotland, but it's probably easier. I don't know if it is easier to do it at clubs. Maybe easier to do it in Scotland. I've not really put as much thought into this. But as Club X, I'd love to be able to reward fans for the number of appearances they make. So is it on their 100th game, they get some sort of recognition? On their 250th game, they get some sort of recognition? Players get this all the time. Fans don't. So what can we do to, again, build that connection? I could carry on. I mean, you look at the ground. We talk about, obviously, you've got your regular fans going, but as a first-timer, whether you think it or not, it's probably a daunting prospect to turn up to a ground that they've never been to, maybe a football ground that they rarely go to in general, let alone their local football ground. And I mentioned this on the, I mean, I might as well plug everything we've been on, Chris, the Fan Experience podcast. And my point was, it's like not all people are the same, and there will be people that are very hesitant about going to something that they're unknown. It will seem intimidating, even if you think your ground's the most welcoming ground that you've got. There's a chance it's not. So it's for first-time fans, can you set up a way that first-time fans can let you know that they're coming? Can you have people there to help first-time fans at the gate or gates, depending on how big the ground is? The stadium, I mean, what impression does the stadium give on arrival? Do certain parts need painted? It sounds something very basic and low level, but, you know, first impressions count. Think about when you go in to look at a new house. You know, it's something that you start judging. People, you might not do it. Somebody listen and go, man, a paint doesn't bother me, but it probably bothers some people. Are the seats fixed? Is there adequate signage around the ground? Are the toilets clean? Especially are the female toilets clean? Can you give away fans a good experience too? Again, Mark Bradley and others have talked about it on the podcast about away fans and giving a good away fan experience. If we've only averaging, or we are averaging 4,000, you know, if we're known as a good away day, you get more away fans who are spending more money at your club. But then it also helps with the atmosphere, which might encourage home fans to go. So you've got things that you can do there. Retail, we're talking about the experience there, and we'll probably come on to retail in a different bit, but what's that experience at the ground like? For kids at the ground, what's it like? Can you provide three kids parks for those going to games? Can you really expect a young child to watch 90 minutes of football? Probably not. But how do you entertain them at the ground and keep them engaged and enjoying their experience, because their experience to a game is very different to what their dad's will be. And then this is probably where people go, Jesus, Michael, you've gone very American now. I believe there's a place for themed matches or themed rounds within Scottish football. Now, I think St Johnston did one a couple of seasons ago, maybe last season, and it was a retro day. But yeah, could you make a big deal of a Christmas game? is there local celebrations in your town? Like, obviously, if anybody listens to Scottish Football Marketing Podcast, they'll know that I'm from Nairn, I support Nairn County. And one of the big days in Nairn is Games Day. And I've suggested to the club that they look at moving or requesting an early kickoff on Games Day to make a bigger deal of that local celebration, if you like. How many clubs have birthdays and they'll tweet out about how it's their 104th birthday, but does anybody actually do anything beyond a big celebration and anniversary? If it is your 104th birthday, have a birthday party at the ground for a certain game that's closest to it. Have sort of things that make normal run-of-the-mill matches a different experience, a sort of turn it into an event. You could get cheesy. You could go for fancy dress games. Berwick, for example, also do Community Day, which was a big success. So you can definitely look at that. But if you're going to look, go down that line, you maybe look at speaking to the key fan groups to make sure it's a success. And I also would say don't give up if it's your first one isn't successful as you hoped, because sometimes you need to shift behaviours, and you just got to, if you believe in the idea, it's just to keep running with it. And the last one, I won't bore you anymore, is we talked about the food and drink, and I know it was part of the brief as well, but how often do you hear football fans complain about the food and drink offering at a ground? I think it can make a big difference. Now, don't get me wrong, I could spend the next hour talking about why we can't still be in a position where we cannot get a beer at a Scottish football game. But at the moment in time, it's not something that we've got. But what can you do to offer something different? With the help of local businesses and suppliers, Chris mentioned it earlier as well. I mean, you could, if you're a small club with a ground and limited food and drink facilities, can you have regular game specials? You go to a restaurant, they've got a specials board. Can you offer something different at a game that is maybe a local restaurant or something that is supplying or somebody that can help? One of the ideas I had, and it was based off a podcast I listened to with the Savannah Bananas, and it is, could we sell a premium ticket for a game which gets you free food and drink for that game? So you can go up as many times as you want for pies or whatever else, and maybe trial it maybe four times a season for one season over different games, see if it's a success, understand what your average spend is, whether you're making money off it, but do something different. It's breaking the script in Scottish football. Again, the Savannah Bananas do something different about in-game bonuses, and it's not something I've ever seen in Scotland, but could you announce before a game that, I'll tell you what, if an opposition player misses a penalty in this game, we're going to give everybody a free donut at the next game or a voucher for a local partner. All of a sudden, it just adds an extra element to a game that that wasn't there before, and you're just gamifying it a bit further. The experience is a bit different, and you're actually just trying to break the script a little bit different to what normally happens in Scottish football without going over the top or being too cheesy.
I wanted to interrupt you so many times there to like agree with so many points, but I didn't want to interrupt your flow either, Michael, because that was absolutely cracking.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of went on a little bit of a ramble there sort of thing. And I think, I mean, I mentioned retail there in there as well. Chris, did you ever think about match around the retail element?
It was probably one of the bits that I didn't touch on as much. I think it was maybe just around the range of merchandise that was available and like the quality of the merchandise that was available too. Like, I think one of the things, we had Josh from Indy 11 on the podcast, and again, one of the ones that I loved, and this is basically just a partnership between Pure Football and Scottish Football Marketing Podcast tonight. But yeah, we had that one on, and again, cracking podcast. But I looked at their merchandise range because I was like, well, I love that podcast. I want to try and support the guys. I kept in touch with Josh since it and wanted to see what it was like. And their initial kit didn't really jump out at me. Obviously, you get quite a lot of the kits in the lower leagues in America kind of stand out. I think I'm thinking Forward Madison there and things like that. But Indy 11s didn't really stand out. So I had to look at their kind of the rest of their range. And they had so many different types of just T-shirts, a couple of different training tops. Like, there was so many hoodies, so many jumpers. so much other merchandise. And I think that is one of the biggest things that, that Scottish football does miss out on. And I know that there's probably the aspect there, if we're talking downsides of that in terms of like overheads and keeping all that stock and what if some of it doesn't sell. But I just think if you, again, if you don't try, you don't know. And I think it kind of diversifying the range of merchandise, like, again, coming back to Rangers today, like they, one of the things they tweeted, who knew they wanted Rangers sliders? And I'm like, well, I'm not going to lie, I wear sliders around the house these days. I'm sure quite a lot of people do. Footballers, you see them wearing them all the time, and they are kind of, they're back, they are in fashion these days. Who knew they wanted Rangers sliders? And I think so many fans will probably snap them up now. But why is there not Club X sliders? Why is there not Club Y sliders? Why is there not Club Z? Like, do you know what I mean? So it's just improving that range and shoving a bit of more quality in there as well. I think those are the two parts to me that will probably and hopefully, again, lead to an increase in the purchases.
I absolutely love it. And what I was going to say there is, I guess a lot of what we spoke about are sort of actions that I guess maybe sit with the club. But what I would also say to anyone who's just a fan of a team, if you've felt like any of these things, or you have had a moment where you think, I wish my club would just do this, why not just reach out? And I think that, you know, these are the sort of things that only takes one little spark and one little idea and one little person to, you know, do something differently that really can turn the needle on any club. And I think, you know, there's so many opportunities out there. And I think, you know, everything that Chris and Michael have said, I personally feel like are things that are within the realms of every club, with the exceptions of maybe some digital aspects. But in terms of connecting with community, transport, engagement, conversations with businesses or whatever, these are all things that can happen. And I guess I know we've probably spoke quite a lot and there's a lot to take in here. So I want to circle back on a couple of things just in the brief, because I am conscious of time here. So one of the things that we've set out in the brief, or one of the things the board have asked you to do for Club X, is to maybe start to consider player sponsorship, as this is quite an effective way for the club to generate revenue. What would be your strategy in trying to you know, get more of an uptake on that? Because I actually seen something from, I won't name the club, but a club that was raffling off shorts, advertising space on their shorts. And I was, it made me feel, well, it was good that they were doing something, but it also made me feel a bit sad that there wasn't demand. So Michael, Chris, I'm going to come to you. How can we create that demand?
I mean, can I jump in here and just say that as part of this, I looked into quite a lot of the different player sponsorship things that are out on in clubs at the moment, and they're so boring. Like, I'm not going to lie, and Gav, you probably feel the same after that example you just gave, but like, a lot of them are just like, yeah, we'll put the logo in the program and you'll get to meet the player that you sponsor once, and you maybe get their shirt at the end of the season, and you can hang out with all the players at the prize given at the end of the season. I'm like, okay, cool, but what happens during the season? That was one of the big things that I thought about. But Michael, you can go first, because I'm sure you've got a few examples.
Yeah, look, player sponsorship is an interesting one, because it's not something I probably ever looked into properly until after you put it in the brief, Gavin. Yeah, you're right, Chris. I think I looked at, everyone seems to offer the same thing, where it was home shirt sponsorship, away shirt sponsorship, training kit sponsorship. You're lucky if you get a seat at a hospitality, but you'll get maybe a shirt. And yeah, it's all, you get all the same stuff. I go back to Club X, and then go back to a reminder of what we want to do, and it's a club that believes in itself, the fans of the town. And when I talked about the how was, we think differently and we do what the town doesn't expect us to do. So if we're thinking about how do we do something different, and if most clubs have the same offerings, how do you distinguish yourselves as a club and hopefully inevitably increase revenues, is that my player sponsorship is sponsors, yep, would pay for a player sponsorship, but as part of that player sponsorship, now this is where clubs are probably going, there is no chance I can get my players to do this. But sponsors would pay a little bit more, and they would pay for the player to do something for the business. whether it's a player appearance at their shop, appear in a video or photo shoot for their business. But if they're paying, let's just say, well, I think I saw a lot that were paying like £300 or £1,000, whatever the number is, we give them the usual shirt, program, hospitality, but you've sponsoring a player, so that player can do something for you. And that's the way I would look at it, doing something slightly different to what's there.
Chris, do you want to add in on that one?
Yeah, mine was kind of similar in terms of looking at a little bit differently and players being partnered up with season ticket holders and or partners. So like the season ticket holders or the partners could choose to pay an additional sum as part of either their season ticket holding or the amount that they've paid to kind of partner up with Club X for the season. And then they would then get allocated a player on top of that. And like I said, it's not just the logo on the website or on the program. It's like it's a monthly commitment, basically. It's a lot more regular. One of the things that, and again, probably might get shot down for this, but footballers don't exactly work the longest hours in the history of the universe. I know that they have tasking kind of training regimes and things like that, but I think off the top of my head, I think they train in the morning and then they have basically the entire day free. That's how I see it anyway. So like the people, either the season ticket holders or the partners, similarly to Michael, like they maybe have a chance to interview the player regularly, like hang out with them, even like maybe there's more club events on, they do like a day in the life of the fan almost, but the player is following around the fan for the entire day, like Instagram takeovers, like a player and the fan hang out for an entire day. I've got receive updates here, but I felt like that was kind of like adopting a dog or adopting like a donkey or something like that, and it was like you receive monthly updates from your adopted donkey. But it was kind of like that, and it's just like thinking about it a little bit more and making it a little bit more unique. And I think that was the thing for me when I was looking at them at the moment. I was just like, they seem to all follow a structure, and maybe that structure works. Maybe that's why they all follow that structure. But if we're trying to think differently and things like that, then I think it needs to be shaken up a little bit.
I love it. And I'm just going to quickly jump in with my own two pence on this one, because this was one that, again, like the both of you, I felt was pretty much, you know, the same across every single club, and nobody was really doing anything differently. And I thought, it's not just about giving something back to the sponsor, it's also about how do I get the player that's sponsored to do something that they want to do with that business that benefits that business. And I thought about, and this is a little bit of a blanket stereotypical type statement, but I thought, what about like if you created maybe something like a club Spotify account or a club Spotify playlist, and for whatever month you had a mixed songs between, you know, the player and the business. So for January or whatever, it's player X and business X, and they've created 10 songs that we think you should listen to. And that's almost like, you know, everyone likes listening to music. People can do that. It's pretty easy to create a Spotify playlist, and you can just push that out there, and it's almost like advertising that business. The player can do it in the space of 2 minutes, doesn't really have to worry about it too much. And then whoever it is, the representative from the, you know, the whoever's sponsoring that, I think it'd be quite a unique thing and something that could be quite fun. And every month you have a different, you know, partnership, or every couple of weeks, however, depending on how many sponsorships you have. But I just felt that, is that something that, you know, would be really easy to do and something that would be really easy to get people interested. And obviously I'm going to be completely honest and say I have no idea about whether there's any licensing issues there with Spotify, but just as a off the top of my head, was something I thought would be quite cool in terms of an output that you get from your sponsorship as the club advertising you with the player in this format. So just an idea, but so guys, let's keep the ball rolling then. So we've covered quite a few different things. Let's sort of pull this next two parts together in terms of sales in the shop and food and drink, and let's just bracket it under sort of the retail aspect of the club. And Michael, what's your sort of thoughts around about that?
Yeah, Chris touched on it a little bit earlier in terms of different merchandise lines, and I think for us there is two elements to it. There's the what is your during the week retail offering, and what's your, how do you get people into your, whether it's a shop or a retail space at game time as well? And for me, I'm big into the football fashion thing. I think it's a growing trend, football fashion. I think you're looking at things like, you know, well, Bohemians, again, without dwelling on the podcast that we've done recently, but they sell shirts worldwide because they offer something different. The club values determine what they do, and that goes with that, goes hand in hand with that. You look at, there was Seattle Kraken, who are a new, I want to say NHL team, I might actually be wrong on what actually sport they play in America, but they're a new team. They've got a strong cultural fit to the local area, but their sales are global because it's a strong brand design. They've gone down the sport fashion route. Juventus weren't daft when they've changed their logo to or updated their club badge. Now, I'm not necessarily advocating a full rebrand and logo redesign for Club X at the moment, or at least not straight away, maybe down the line for sure. But, you know, one of the things is, if we talk, Chris talked about expanding the merchandise range, and yeah, we've got to be wary about minimum orders, and you don't want to be stuck with stock 2 years down the line that you've not sold, because that's money that's gone out that's not come back in. But can you partner with local illustrators, businesses for additional merchandise ranges? Can we look at, focus on that football fashion? And I would, if we're talking about Club X, and we go again, keep going back to what the values and what the objectives of what we're trying to do. And for us, it's about doing something different that the town doesn't expect, and being something that the fans believe in and the town believes in, is let's aim to have the best kits in the SPFL every season from a design perspective. Now, obviously, that all is dictated by what kit deals you might be in, how much that costs. Again, referencing the Bohemians podcast, they partnered with a local supplier within Dublin to give them more creativity and flexibility, but it was at a slightly higher cost. But it's paying dividends for them because they're able to sell it elsewhere. I would look at increasing the number of licensees where possible, where that makes life a bit easier. They pay you for to use the club badge on their product ranges, and it's up to them how much product they sell. At the end of the day, you'll get additional revenue from that. Again, if people want more information on the retail stuff, we did a podcast with Stephen from Football Nation and Stephen Romeo from Scottish FA, and licensees was a big one there. And sliders, there's probably a licensee out there that does sliders that will want to put your club badge on them and sell them. And that's great, because then you don't have to order 500 pairs of sliders and hope that you can sell 500 pairs of sliders when they'll do it on your behalf, and you can get some money off the back of that. A lot of it comes down to your online, and can you build or improve your online store and make it easy for people to buy, have the right ranges. Again, there is some investment there. There is ways of doing it. Again, there's ways of setting up your own online shops via things like Shopify, Big Cartel, that, again, you probably need a bit of expertise there. But, you know, there's options, or you partner with a third party. And then if you're looking at it on the flip side of what can you do at your ground, especially on match day, I think it's Notts County that are a good example of this, where on match day, players that haven't made the squad that are injured, suspended, or for whatever reason, they'll make player appearances and help out in the shop. All of a sudden, that gives you fans an excuse, especially younger fans that want to go into the shop because they'll get to see one of their players. So can we do that? Can we maximise the space, make it an actual experience when you go into the shop? And then hopefully that finds an excuse to get people to visit the ground.
I love it. Chris, what about you? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I gave a couple earlier in terms of, like, yeah, just increasing the range and the quality of the merchandise. That's where Michael mentioned the sliders there, because I spotted Rangers tweeting about it today. And again, a club that has obviously had some issues commercially and on the retail side of things, but they are reaping the benefits now of this new partnership with Castor, I think they're called, and opened the new club store at Ibrox, and it's gone absolutely superbly to date by the looks of it, and they have been, again, it gives a chance to create some content around it too and sell at the same time. Like, Rangers were replying to fans with kind of tweets and images of some of the stuff that they were saying that they wanted to see that was in the store, and that just creates a little cycle in terms of like, fans are interested, the club's showing it to them, the fans are probably going to go into the store and buy what they've seen, and yeah, it's just trying to create that intrigue and keep that kind of commerciality of it going in terms of getting the revenue through the tills.
I love it again. Honestly, it all just makes so much sense to me. And that I know that there's all the things we already spoke about. So I want to quickly circle back that we know that time's an issue. We know that, you know, resource is an issue. But again, to get back to the overarching point, you have to believe that something different can be done. And it only takes one or two people to start that sort of movement for our clubs, and it can make a huge difference. So we mentioned earlier, Michael, around about connecting with local restaurants around about their specials with food and drink. What have you thought any more about that? Is there any other avenues that you would go down in terms of increasing the amount of food or drink sold on match day?
I think one of the things when we were during lockdown, it was quite an interesting listen on Sports Sound was, and forgive me because I forget his exact name, but it was this Strinrar person, and they were saying that they made more money out of hospitality than they do gator seats. And well, yep, I think you need to improve the standard fare that you've got within the ground. I think one of the ways you could look at increasing revenue and that food and drink offering at a sort of more premium level is your hospitality experience. And it's a simple way of looking at it, but I think if you improve your hospitality experience, you're probably going to improve your revenue. And for me, at the football, again, this is a sweeping generalisation, and people will be saying, oh no, we do things different, and that's great for them, and I fully appreciate the Wobby clubs doing something different. But on the outside looking in, every hospitality experience seems to be the same, or for the most part it's the same. And for me, it's like, what can we do to change that environment and the packages we offer? So can we target different audiences, not just corporate businesses? For example, can we target like the day outers, the groups of guys that are maybe, or women, that are maybe looking at a day at the football with a few drinks in a relaxed environment? So for example, it's not shirt and tie, but you actually get something slightly different. I think it's Lewis FC in England, and this started off as an April Fool's Day thing, but they said that they were putting beach huts into the ground, and you would get your hospitality experience in this beach hut. And actually, people quite liked the idea, so they kitted out four beach huts into behind one of the goals, where you get it's kitted out nicely. I think some of them have got different themes. They've got Wi-Fi, they've got beer. They are charging, I think, something like £150 a time. They also sell out. They make money on them. I think they cost about £1,000 each to fit out. But they did something different, and it's because they were targeting a different audience. And one thing, I've suggested this to Nairn before, and is, you know, can you target stag do's? Can you create a package that includes allowing the stag to be a mascot? So your standard thing, you see clubs and it does the rounds on social and stuff like that, but if you're a club that doesn't take yourself too seriously, or it matches your values, and don't get me wrong, you're not going to have some 30-year-old guy walking out hand in hand with your captain every weekend, but you know, there's opportunities that you sell a package, and as a premium add-on, the stag can be a mascot. There's additional revenue for you there, and not necessarily food and drink, because you'd expect, if you're changing that hospitality experience, that you're really tapping into that local market. You're tapping into local suppliers, where you're helping them and they're helping you, and you really sort of change. It goes back to what I've been trying to say throughout, is what our objectives are with Club X in my Club X world, and that whole avenue of trying to do things slightly different.
Chris, do you want to come in?
Yeah, Michael kind of touched on the hospitality element, but mine was a lot more in terms of just your average standard fare that you get on the concourses. And I think, again, Michael touched on it earlier too, one of his examples, but thinking about that first impression of when you get into a football stadium and you're in the concourse and it's just a big, huge grey cavern. And we had the guys from Studio Something on the podcast, and they were part of a project that revamped the kind of look and feel of Tynecastle at Hearts, and kind of looking at introducing a lot of things around the concourse there. And for me, I look at that and I think that improves the kind of experience of the concourse. But, and you might think where I'm going here with kind of when you're talking about food and drink, but if you change that look and feel of the concourse, it becomes a much more a place where people want to spend their time. And I think for me, that will potentially lead to extra purchases as well behind the tills, and buying an extra pie, buying an extra drink, buying that pack of crisps that your kids wants, and along with that Capri-Sun or whatever it is that they're asking for. And I think, again, if you're doing that side of things, then you could start to level up in terms of your offering on the pie stalls as well. Obviously, we're saying pies and we're talking about your Scotch pie, you're talking about your steak pie, but at St Johnstone as well, I think they've got a pie of the week at every home game, and every time it's something to do with chorizo, I'm like, oh, well, I go to McDermott Park this weekend because I quite fancy the sound of that. Do you know what I mean? You've got your steak and black pudding pie at our broth at Gayfield, and there's these things, and there is clubs doing things differently here, offering a little bit different, but, and again, I'm talking about that kind of thing, but you can then go even further, and again, something we've touched on in the pod a few times, but kind of the range of things that you're offering there too, in terms of more people are vegan and vegetarian than ever before. What do you offer for them at the match? What do you offer that's not a pie? I think burgers and hot dogs get kind of slagged a bit as well, but there's definitely things that you can do to improve that aspect to things as well. And I think like I said, it's twofold. You're trying to improve how it feels to be standing on that concourse. Do you want to spend time in there, or do you just want to go out and get your seat before the match? And then what else do you want to buy on top of what you're maybe already buying?
Honestly, I feel like you're preaching to the converted. But I think it's a really, really great point, Chris. And you know what, there's been a lot that we've spoke about, and there's a lot of different sort of connecting dots throughout all of this. And I guess what I just want to do before we sort of finish up on this, Michael, you mentioned earlier at the start that this will take a lot of time, and there's obviously a lot of different components within this. But do you think that what we spoke about, do you think that there could be a club out there? So given what we spoke about the brief in terms of the size of the club, the season ticket holders, etc., all the information we spoke about, do you think there's clubs out there that could learn from this podcast?
I would hope so. I certainly would hope so. I think it's like why the reason Chris and I do the Scottish Football Marketing podcast is because we hope that clubs will even just pick up points out of it, take ideas off of it and apply them to their club. That's the whole reason for starting it, is to hopefully try and help clubs and raise the standards within Scottish football. So, yeah, I can't say for certain if they would, obviously, but certainly the element of hope.
And Chris, what about you?
No, definitely. I totally agree with Michael there in terms of that is why. And when we do get feedback from the podcast that we do, and you see some of the things that people are taking from it, it's honestly great to see. And if the same can be done from this podcast, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up Michael and I's arses here. Like, I've never worked in a football club. I feel like a bit of a fraud sometimes, and I'm trying to get football clubs to do things better in this space. Michael obviously has experience at the Scottish FA, but I think for me, you gave us this brief, and you gave us a bit of time to fill it in, and we've gone away and come up with these things. It's not impossible for the clubs to go away and do exactly the same in their aspect, and I would really like to hope that the clubs can take a little bit of time. I would like to think that they could have taken a little bit of time over the last kind of couple of months as football's not been on. But even now, there's still some time. You can find that time from anywhere and just sit down and think about some of these things, draw out a bit of a strategy and think about some of the aims that come off of it.
So I think that was an absolute outstanding listen. And as someone being involved in this conversation, I was really excited and really connected with all the things that you and Michael spoke about. And it feels to me that, you know, there's definitely things in here that clubs in Scotland can learn. And hopefully, you know, that if there is anything that has come of use to this, then I'd love to hear from any club. I'm sure you guys would too, that, you know, that we've been able to add some value back into our game. And just before we sign off, Chris, where can our listeners find you? And I know you obviously have a few different aliases on Twitter, so just give us the most likely one.
Yeah, I suppose the best one is Sports Market in Scotland, which is at Sports Market School on Twitter.
And Michael?
Yeah, either at Michael Bockle on Twitter or find me on LinkedIn, which is, I always, when you have to do like the three lie, have you ever played the game Two Truths, One Lie? One of my truths is always, and I still believe this is the case, although I've not checked in a while, that I'm the only Michael Bockle in the world, so it shouldn't be hard to find me.
Love it. Thank you to everyone that's listened, and I think there'll be some follow-up material released for people to have a look at if they've enjoyed this, and also the sort of basic brief that I sent out to Michael and Chris. If you want to have a crack at it yourself, then I'll be able to share that as well. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon.